What's happening? Welcome back. 404-892-2703. I almost gave up my cell phone number. Again, I did that one time, and there's still this guy that calls me at about 2, 3 in the morning every time he's drunk, and he just wants somebody to talk to. So I talk to him. If I'm up, if I hear the phone ring, I will speak with him. Well, is that you, DJ Darnell? Now that I think about it, I think that's DJ Darnell's drunk voice. Okay, ladies and gentlemen, we have Ken Shigley in the studio. He is a candidate for Georgia Court of Appeals, a former prosecutor, also former state bar president. Mr. Shigley, thank you for being here in the studio.
Thank you for having me.
Let's get the microphone a little closer.
Thank you for having me.
Thank you for being here. Your opponent, Ken Hodges, did initially confirm over the weekend that he would be here. He contacted me this morning and said he looked back at his schedule and had a conflict and could not be here today. Initially, when I called you and you and I were going back and forth, you had a conflict also in your schedule, and you called me back and said, Mr. Ritchie, I'm going to rearrange my schedule to be on your show. That's what you told me, and we appreciate that. The listening audience appreciates that. Thank you.
Thank you for having me.
Okay, let's start with the clip that has been in the news lately.
Trafficking conviction for an innocent man, the former prosecutor, Ken Shigley, is now asking voters to make him an appeals court judge. 11 Alive's Doug Richards has more on what happened and why.
Sometimes you get a case that really shouldn't have been prosecuted.
Ken Shigley told an audience that as a prosecutor in a courtroom 40 years ago, he convicted a defendant whose case never should have gone to trial.
And it just began to smell bad in the middle of the trial. I did everything I could to lose it, but I couldn't.
Shigley describes the defendant as a young African-American man, a college student who got snared in a drug case around 1978. Shigley says he can't remember the defendant's name.
The jury convicted the guy. He appealed. I tried to lose the appeal. I couldn't. I tried to make the weakest case for the state I could.
Shigley is now asking voters to elect him to an appeals court judgeship.
Ken Hodges is the best choice for Court of Appeals judge.
His opponent is Ken Hodges, also a former prosecutor.
In the end, they have to do what's right. They have to.
Cobb County District Attorney Vic Reynolds says no prosecutor should try a case they feel should be dismissed.
If I had a prosecutor and he or she believed a case ought to be dismissed and they didn't move to dismiss it, then I would fire them.
I hope he went on and had a good life.
Shigley says he didn't dismiss the case because he was afraid he'd lose his first job out of college.
Hopefully, 40 years later, I have enough maturity to make a better choice than I did that day.
Shigley told me that he intended to tell a personal and cautionary story about real injustice. The question is whether voters Tuesday will make him pay for his honesty. Doug Richards, 11
You were very honest in that forum. I have moderated multiple debates with you, and I think you have been honest in every single forum. The question is, what really happened? It was 40 years ago, I think.
Just about.
Almost 40 years ago. Did you prosecute an innocent man?
First, let me say this. All my life, since I was a teenager, I have been concerned about racial bias, racial profiling, systemic racism. I first saw as a teenager. As a judge, I would do everything I can to ensure the law is fairly and equitably applied to everyone of every race. I first saw racism in a courtroom when I was 18 and had a speeding ticket and saw the difference between the way I was treated and the way that a black kid with the same thing was treated. As a court of appeals judge, I'll do everything I can to ensure the law is equitably applied to everyone. Now, about this question, no, I did not prosecute someone I knew to be innocent. In my first year as an assistant DA, I was assigned to a case at the last minute. If I had not already been concerned about racial fairness in the court, I would not have been bothered by this case and wouldn't have recalled it and brought it up when speaking from the heart at a forum recently as an example of systemic racial bias in the court system. Now, about the specifics of that case, I was finishing up a trial in another courtroom. I was told to go down to a second courtroom. The chief assistant DA, who was my immediate superior, was already doing jury selection. I picked up the file and read the investigative reports and the crime lab report to prepare to go ahead and try the case while he went up to another courtroom to do something else. There was nothing in that file to even suggest the racial and political motives that I later began to suspect. Now,
let's pause there. Okay. We're coming to a hard break. Let's pause there. We'll come right back to where you are now, okay? 404-892-2703. I'm in the studio with Ken Shigley, former State Bar president, former prosecutor, and current candidate for Georgia Court of Appeals. Realest Man on Radio.
Call us at 404-892-2703 on News and Talk 1380 WAOK. He's the mouth of the South.
No one man should have all that power.
Just keep it real.
Who gives you the real talk? Rashad Ritchie is on News and Talk 1380 WAOK. Call us at 404-892-2703 on News and Talk 1380 WAOK.
What's happening? Welcome back. 404-892-2703. I'm in the studio with Court of Appeals candidate for the state of Georgia, Mr. Ken Shigley, former State Bar president, candidate for Georgia Court of Appeals, right here with me. He was in the news last week because of comments he made during a forum where it sounded as if he prosecuted a man he thought was innocent. He's explaining that situation today.
Because I was always concerned about systemic racism in the court system, this case had weighed on my heart. And when I was speaking from the heart in a Q&A session, a forum at a black church, I brought it up in broad brush. I hadn't reconstructed a lot of details about other aspects of the case. Yesterday I was worshiping at a black church in Douglas County, seeing folks that had been friends all the way back to high school. And I think in that environment it helped to bring up some deep memories, visual memories from that courtroom. And what happened was I started the presentation of the case based on what was in the file, which looked like just a clean drug bust from what was there. The chief assistant DA left the courtroom to do something else. He came back in as we were getting into the stuff about the fact that this kid had been doing black voter registration, had applied for a job in the DA, in the sheriff's office, and it began, and other factors began to smell bad. The chief assistant DA, who was my immediate superior, I now recall, wanted to do the cross-examination of the defendant. The reason I remember that and have a visual memory of it when I dig down 40 years back is he asked the question, which he was very proud of, what kind of cop did you want to be, a narc? He thought that was real funny. And then, based on that memory, I also remember now that he did the closing argument. So I did not have an opportunity to do anything to dismiss the case, even if I had tried. If I had tried at that point, not only would I have been fired, first I would have been overruled, and then I would have been fired.
Fair point. So let me ask you this. During that time, did you believe in your heart this man was possibly innocent of the crime he was charged with?
I had suspicions that he may be. Later on, after that case, I scrutinized more closely searches done by the detective, the narc, so to speak, who led that search. And I began to see a pattern of his arrest being accompanied by charges of obstructing an officer, which I began to suspect were explaining away bruises. I saw another case later on where another officer had written a long narrative report of a search, which concluded by Detective So-and-so reached behind a sofa and came up with a bag of green leafy material. I don't recall whether I interviewed that other officer as to whether he suspected it was a plant or I just concluded it and didn't present it to the grand jury.
So let me be clear, because it sounds as if your mind was going to the place back then during your early prosecutorial days that possibly the drugs were planted on this individual. Now, what is the responsibility of a prosecutor when there's a feeling? You have no real evidence, obviously, but there's a feeling that something else is happening here. What's your real responsibility then?
I think Vic Reynolds is right. If you know that this is wrong, you don't prosecute it. I don't think I ever got to the point of knowing that. I had a gut feeling that something wasn't right. At that point, my immediate superior was back in the courtroom, and I wasn't in charge.
How did you end up getting the case?
My recollection is that I was trying a case in another courtroom. At the end of that, while I was waiting on the jury, I was told to go down and relieve the other guy who's going to go ahead and strike the jury. And I went down there, and it was a thin file. I read through the investigative report.
There's some listening right now, and they are wondering, well, if you had that type of gut instinct, did you follow up to see what ended up happening to him? And why did you also prosecute in the appellate phase? Because there was an appeal.
My recollection is that the appellate phase, I just wrote a weak brief, and it was affirmed apparently without opinion.
So basically there was maybe a system failure. You tried to present, as you said, a weak case. You thought if you presented a weak case that this person that you felt was possibly innocent and set up would have a better chance.
If I had gone to my boss at that time and said, I don't think this is right, he would have just said, assign somebody else to handle the appeal and write a stronger brief than I probably did.
Wow. So if you would have registered your issue with your boss at that time, instead of writing a weaker, what is it, a brief?
Right.
He would have just assigned it to somebody else.
I'm confident of that.
Okay. When you said during the forum that if you were more of a mature prosecutor, you possibly would have dropped the charges. Today you're saying you really didn't have the authority to drop the charges. Explain that difference to me.
As I have gone back into deep memory and reconstructed the whole sequence as best I can of what that transcript would show, I now recall that the chief assistant DA had come back into the room, and he had taken back over in terms of cross-examination and closing argument.
So
he was in charge at that point.
Do you think that person felt possibly something else was going on here?
I never got that feeling. I think the things that gave me pause made him more enthusiastic.
Why is that?
Well, he certainly was enthusiastic.
About prosecuting
right.
this individual. Okay.
Right. And over the years, the people have asked me, did you do anything to go back and make it right? Well, for a long time, I didn't think there was anything I probably could do that would be effective. I didn't recall his name. I couldn't find it in the appellate records. I finally concluded it had to be an affirmance without opinion or an unpublished decision. And there's no database.
You know what would be pretty remarkable? If you could make it right, if you could bring attention to it, find him, see what happened.
Well, to clear my name as well as to try to help him, if I can, after this election, I will take some time to go dig around in warehouses and see if I can figure it out. But there's no database from which I can search.
Now, you've made a pretty bold proclamation on my show today. And what's interesting, Mr. Shigley, is that I actually believe you. But I want to encourage you, win or lose tomorrow, win or lose.
Absolutely.
That you take the time to do
yeah,
that.
Yeah, I feel that my reputation for my entire career has been besmirched by a misinterpretation of what happened that I happened to bring out in speaking from the heart in a forum at a black church as an illustration of racial bias in the system. And it's been made to look like I deliberately prosecuted somebody I knew to be innocent, which is absolutely not true.
We got more on the other side. 404-892-2703. That gets you into conversation today. If you have a question, 404-892-2703. In the studio with Ken Shigley, former state bar president, current candidate for Georgia Court of Appeals. You're getting real with the realest man on radio.
This is Sheriff Victor Hill, and when I'm out patrolling the streets fighting crime, I'm listening to Real Talk with Rashad Ritchie, the realest man in talk radio.
Call us at 404-892-2703 on News and Talk 1380 WAOK. Honor honoring the legacy of Atlanta, the home of Daryl Killian, host of Auto Insider, WAOK Atlanta, WVEE HT3, the voice of the community. News James. News and Talk 1380, WAOK.
Now it's the real player's turn.
This is how the real is supposed to sound.
You are now watching the throne. Don't let me get in my zone.
All right, you know what time it is. You're listening to Real Talk with Rashad Richie, the realest man in radio.
On News and Talk 1380 WAOK. Call us at 404-892-2703. On News and Talk 1380 WAOK.
I think your girl posts a BM. So I hear her in the DM.
What's happening? Welcome back. 404-892-2703. Still in the studio with Ken Shigley, former State Bar President and current candidate for Georgia Court of Appeals. His opponent is candidate Ken Hodges. Thank you, Mr. Shigley, for remaining with us.
Thank you.
Okay, so you gave us an explanation, went deeper into what happened during that particular trial. You've also made basically a promise that you're going to look further into this and possibly restore this person and your reputation at the same time. Let me ask you. Court of Appeals, big job. Why give it to you?
Well, I think I'm the best qualified for it. I'm the only candidate who has served as state bar president, which gives you a 40,000-foot perspective on the legal system. I'm the only one who's written a book that's been, if anybody ever asks you to write a book that requires annual updates, say no, that's been quoted by the Supreme Court. And I've got 40 years of experience that I'm willing to learn from. The thing we've been talking about here that's weighed on my heart is, you know, is something that I have learned from in my life, and I think I would take that concern with me to the court. As I told you, since I was 18 years old and had a speeding ticket in Atlanta traffic court and saw the racial disparity in the way I was treated versus the way another kid who's did exactly the same thing with the same cop at the same place was treated, and then another guy had done the same thing who looked more like I do now, went in with his lawyer, I've seen that disparity, and it's always weighed on my heart what happened in that case a long time ago.
Maybe, possibly. Possibly this makes you a better appellate court judge. But there are some who would say, Mr. Shigley, you should have stopped the prosecution. You should have made a public objection if they chose to continue it. You should have been an activist and the hell with your job. What you say to that?
With the maturity I have now, maybe I would have. I was a kid. Kids make mistakes. Hopefully we learn from them. Wisdom is the fruit of experience. Experience is often the compilation of mistakes you learn from. Now, compare that to Mr. Hodges, whose empty chair is here, who didn't come. Folks in Columbus have been calling me ever since I got into he got into this race against me, and alerting me to their concerns about a police shooting case down there where he was called in as special prosecutor and did not get an indictment, even though it was all on video with an innocent black motorist being shot twice in the head while lying on the ground at a traffic stop, and he hadn't done anything. And, you know, I don't know all the procedural details of that case, but I do know that from my experience way back then, if a DA asked for an indictment, he usually gets one. The old saying is a DA can indict a ham sandwich if he wants to. And there's a lot of unresolved questions about that.
That case, I did do research on that case. As a matter of fact, when I put out that Mr. Hodges would be on the show today, I received a lot of inboxes about that particular case as well. According to the sources I've read, many people marched in protest to how the case was handled, including Reverend Jesse Jackson. Further analysis of that case showed me that Ken Hodges did not actually ask for a direct indictment. He then went on the record to say that Kenneth Walker, the man who was killed, should not have been killed. He should be alive. So that's where the story for me begins and ends. And a lot of people in that area, including ministers who contacted me, who listened to the show, they still carry that with them.
I've heard that story from folks in Columbus. They're really concerned. They still are. I've also heard it not just from black folks in Columbus, but, you know, at a lunch I heard it from, you know, a guy who looks a lot like me who was still concerned about it. And I think, is it better to have a judge who learns from and carries in his heart an experience of something that might have been done better, or somebody who doesn't learn from it, admit he did anything wrong?
Let me read this article out of full transparency. Unfortunately, Mr. Hodges is not right here to defend what the allegations are, but I will read this article, part of this article. Ken Hodges, the special prosecutor who presented the Kenneth Walker case in November 2004, said in an interview Wednesday he expected the grand jury to indict the deputy sheriff who shot and killed Walker. When the Muskogee County grand jury returned the note bill indicating former deputy David Glisson would not face charges, Hodges said he was surprised. In fact, at the time the grand jury returned the note bill, Hodges was in a government center office with Glisson's attorney, Richard Hagler, working out details for Glisson to post bond, according to Hodges. Hodges said, I felt like there would be a true bill. I don't agree or disagree with the grand jury decision. I think that the evidence was Deputy Glisson pulled Mr. Walker out of the back of the car. The evidence that was presented there determined that it was an accident, which is obviously what a majority of the grand jury concluded. Let me make no mistake. Kenneth Walker never should have died that day. Never. And his death is a tragedy.
On that, we agree.
Okay. 404-892-2703. We'll take calls on the other side. 404-892-2703. 40 years later, you still carried that case. Has it bothered you?
It has. It's an example of problems we have had for 400 years in this country and that carry over in our court system and our society today. The Kenneth Walker case is an example of something that black folks are concerned about, of if you got a bad taillight, if you look like somebody else that they're looking for. Things can have been very badly. Every black parent I know of sons has talked about having the talk with their sons.
You know what's politically interesting with all of this? Nobody brought this up. Nobody created a gotcha moment and pulled something from the archive and made an accusation against you. Nobody. You did this. You said it.
I shared something I've been carrying on my heart. And then it is taken out of context, and coincidentally taken out of context, and I started getting calls from reporters wanting details about 3 days after some of my African-American supporters in South Georgia were canvassing neighborhoods in Albany on behalf of me and Stacey Abrams. And then I started getting calls from reporters wanting details right then.
We got more on the other side. 404-892-2703. Phone lines are jam-packed. You cannot get through. Make sure you hold the number. Listen for me to clear a line. 404-892-2703. 15 minutes after the hour. You know what time it is.
News and Talk 1380 WAOK. Call us at 404-892-2703. On News and Talk 1380 WAOK.
Wait a minute, get your phone.
Call us now at 404-892-2703. Rashad Ritchie is on News and Talk 1380 WAOK.
Six and forever, rock a block, Rockefeller.
I'm feeling it. Feel the bash at the top of my way. Feel the legs pushing up on the sail. Feel the high that you get from the line. If you feel it,
I keep it real
in the
most. I know you're feeling it.
What's happening? Welcome back. 404-892-2703. Still in the studio with Ken Shigley, former state bar president and current candidate for Georgia Court of Appeals. Thank you for remaining with us today.
Thank you.
Election is tomorrow. Election day is tomorrow. How has the election trail been, campaign trail?
Well, it's interesting being a first-time candidate. Now, there are things that I've been involved with over the years that I think helped prepare me that we haven't mentioned. I was on the Criminal Justice Reform Council for a couple of years. The work of that council has helped to bring down the percentage of blacks in the prison system. I think there's been something like a 20 or 30% reduction of the number of blacks in the prison system in the past 8 years due to all these incremental changes. That work is not complete. anybody who wants to be a judge, anybody who is a judge, ought to read the Alexander book, The New Jim Crow, if you're familiar with it, about mass incarceration at the time of colorblindness. Most of the white folks I know don't think that they're biased.
Yeah.
It's implicit. It's subconscious. And I think judges need to be very self-aware about that. And one thing I've tried to do is learn from past experiences over my lifetime. Now, Mr. Hodges, who's not here, was involved in a situation where he was basically prosecuting whistleblowers who were trying to expose what they thought was corruption in the hospital system down there. Those cases wound up getting thrown out, and there was a federal civil rights suit in which he was a defendant, in which the U.S. 11th Circuit Court of Appeals held that he was off the hook because of prosecutorial immunity, even for use of perjured testimony. A lot of folks in Albany have been contacting me about that. I have not been using it in the campaign because I wanted to stay high and not get into mudslinging. But now that I'm being targeted, I think folks deserve to look at it.
Okay. All right, let's go to Roderick. We're taking calls. Roderick in Atlanta, line two. Roger, good day. Welcome.
Hey, how you doing, Dr. Shaw?
Good, sir. How are you?
I'm doing great. And I'd like to say hello to your guests.
Hey there.
Well, I've talked to you before, Dr. Shaw. You know, I even come to your classes. And,
well, thank you.
I never ever just really told you my past, but I'm speaking to your guests from experience. I've been in that situation. In 2001, I was arrested for something that I didn't do, and I actually had a lawyer that was on my case. And when I asked him to go and investigate whatever went on and all of that, he never did. He was losing the case. So he asked me during the trial, where did the crime take place? And I asked him, I said, well, you never been to the crime scene? And he said, no. And then during the trial, he told me he blew the case. He purposely blew the case because he was losing. And I asked him, I said, why would you do that? You know, and from the results of that, I ended up doing 2 months short of 5 years. And to this day, this was in 2001. Now, I'm almost 60 years old, and I've been out since 2005. But today, I can't even get my own place. Certain jobs I can't get.
Brother Roderick. Roderick.
Yes, sir.
Brother, I appreciate your plight. I really do. But we have a lot of people that are trying to get through to ask a question to the candidate. Do you have a question for the candidate?
Okay. My thing is this right here. I just want to ask him, do they ever take in consideration how that would affect other people in their lives, even though, you know, he's telling what's going on now. But years later, you still got to pay for it. I'm serving time now, even though I'm free. And, I mean, just because of that lawyer did, and he came back. That's why I'm out. I got on the appeal because he admitted he purposely blew the case. But it didn't do me no good. It messed my life up. You know, and I'm still paying for that.
Right. Roger, thank you, brother. We appreciate your call. Thank you, sir.
Let me say 2 points there. First, after I left the DA's office, I did a lot of appointed criminal defense where you just say, you know, you go do it. I took it very seriously, and except where a family member was voluntarily testifying against their own family member, I always got acquittals or huge reductions of charges on those. But on the Criminal Justice Reform Council, he says he's still serving time. One of the things that we were beginning to look at, and if I'm elected, I'm going to ask whoever the governor may be, he or she, to reinstitute that in their administration and put me back on it. One of the things that I was concerned about is collateral consequences of conviction after you've done your time. There are all sorts of things in licensing, in, you know, the check the box thing on job applications and background checks and so forth, that, you know, there needs to be a way to address.
404-892-2703. Let's go to Nate in Columbus. Nate, good day. Welcome.
Hey, Nate.
Hey, good morning, Rashad, and help welcome to your guests. Hello to your guests.
Thank you.
Hey, Rashad, I just want to make a comment. As you know, I was in the NAACP down here, and listening to your, I'm still in the NAACP, but mm-hmm. I was in the NAACP when Kenneth Walker got killed, and Ken Hodges was the DA from Albany that came up here and took that case. And so that case is really has stuck into the craw of a lot of people in Columbus because that case was so mishandled. I don't know if he even mentioned the fact that Ken Hodges also took a deposition from the deputy but did not swear him in. So the deputy, it's in documented, the deputy used what they call the fill-the-barrel technique. And he put that barrel, he was in a support position out on the highway. It happened December the 10th, 2003. That's how much that case has stuck with people here in Columbus. I can remember the date, the hour, and everything that it happened. It happened right out on the interstate. I don't want to get into all of the detail like that, but Ken Hodges does not need to be elected. I'm just saying that from that. That is a sentiment from everybody. I don't know if you know Ed DuBose.
Absolutely.
Okay.
Yes, I've talked with Ed.
He was the NAACP president, and I was working with him in the local NAACP, and Jesse Jackson came down and all that. We had one of the biggest marches that Georgia has seen outside of Atlanta right here in Columbus. People from all over came down here to march. That was a god-awful case. This was a family man married with a little girl, and that man got killed out there on that interstate, and he has yet to get justice to this day.
Nate, I appreciate your call. Thank you, sir.
Nate, let me just mention that this is not the only time Mr. Hodges has not shown up. I went down to the NAACP candidate forum on a Sunday afternoon in Savannah, and he was not there either. I went to the DeKalb Lawyers Association, which is the African-American bar organization in DeKalb County. I got a shout-out there as one of the good white people. He was not there.
We got more on the other side. 404-892-2703, Ken Shigley, candidate for Georgia Court of Appeals.
Call us at 404-892-2703 on News and Talk 1380, WAOK.
Club case, something jumps off. You back up for the high, but the pump off. In the graveyard is where you get dumped off. All we wanna do is party. And buy everybody at the bar card.
What up? Welcome back. 404-892-2703. I'm still with Ken Shigley, candidate for Georgia Court of Appeals. The election is tomorrow. You've been very kind with your time. Let's wrap it up this segment. We have a few more callers. Let's go to Keith in Austale, line 4. Keith, good day. Welcome.
Good morning, Dr. Ritchie, WLK, Councilman Shigley, and listening audience. Thank you for taking my call.
Thanks for calling.
Yes, my question to the councilman
is a councilman. He is legal counsel, but he's not a councilman. Whatever.
Yeah, that's my mistake.
That's all right.
Yes. Two questions. You're not the candidate with the bus, are you?
No, I am not. I do not have a bus.
Okay. Second question.
That's Michael Williams, just if you keep
it. Yeah, I've been driving a Subaru Crosstrek around Georgia.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right. Thank you. My question is kind of like maybe on the national stage in regard to our three equal branches of government and that in that Congress shall make no laws respecting an establishment of religion. And I'm just wondering, in light of issues taking place over there in Israel, are we in a constitutional crisis with, you know, no information coming out of there?
You do realize he's running for Court of Appeals in the state of Georgia.
Right, but this was kind of pertaining to the Constitution, I guess.
Well, you know, we have a constitution that is the highest law of the land, but that's that's over my pay grade.
All right. 404-892-2703. Todd in Atlanta, Line three. Todd, good day. Welcome.
Hey, Rashad. Ken Shigley. Hey, Ken Shigley. Do you have either present or past Court of Appeal judges from the state of Georgia that you will model yourself after?
Well, there are a number of judges. You know, I know a lot of judges, so a lot of people to model after. I will mention a couple of them in Georgia that I think are great role models in a way, and there's a couple of former Georgia Supreme Court Chief Justices, Lea Ward Sears and Bob Benham, who the first African-American Chief Justices, and who were not afraid or have not been afraid to dissent when necessary to make a point. I will not be afraid to dissent if I need to. Judge Harold Murphy, I've known for all my life, practically. He's now 90 years old, a federal judge in Rome, who's just the most courteous, kind person on the bench, the best judicial demeanor I've ever seen.
Okay, I have two other questions.
Sure. Hold on, Todd. Let him answer the question first.
Let me just mention that in our previous forums, Mr. Hodges and I have both mentioned Justice Scalia for different reasons. I mentioned that his methodology of textual analysis was a useful tweak on statutory interpretation, but I didn't care for his sometimes harsh manner and some of his conclusions. Mr. Hodges mentioned that he'd gone hunting with him three times on South Georgia hunting plantations. I have never in my life been invited to a South Georgia hunting plantation with or without a U.S. Supreme Court justice.
Okay. In a nutshell, if you have two that you can give, can you give me an example of one case that the Georgia Court of Appeals, separate from anything that you may have already talked about in the broadcast, can you give me an example of one decision that the Court of Appeals of Georgia that you felt got right and one example of something that they got wrong that I can take a look at after the broadcast?
Yeah, I don't have citations here, but if you email me or email the Rashad or contact the station, I'll email you the citations. One fairly recent case that I thought they got right was where there was a question about statute of limitations, where there's a criminal act involved, and whether the statute is told with regard to everybody in the case or just against with regard to the case against the criminal himself. And a young judge who's now in the Supreme Court did that textual analysis and said, you know, it's told us to all of them because that's what the statute says, and overruled some cases to the contrary. A case that I wrote an article about a few years ago, there was a very obscure procedural issue about permissive joinder of different defendants whose actions contribute to the same damage. There was a case 20, 25 years ago where the court just made a mishmash of it and got it all screwed up. And, I've argued several times that the court needed to overturn that. We just haven't had a chance to get it to an appeal.
And then my final question is, based on your limited understanding at this point, because you're on the opposite side of it, do you feel that the Court of Appeals has a sufficient amount of supporting staff for the judges to do their job to the maximum amount of efficiency?
Well, the Georgia Court of Appeals has the highest caseload, I think, still of per judge of any intermediate court of appeals in the nation. They expanded the court, and then they expanded the jurisdiction, so you got about the same thing. It's a quandary.
Okay, I'll check those cases out. Thanks, Rashad.
Thanks, Todd.
Let Rashad know, and I'll get those sites to you.
Yep. All right. Andy, Marietta. Andy, good day. Welcome.
Hi, Andy.
Good morning, Rashad. Good morning. How are y'all this morning?
Good, Andy. How are you?
My question with the candidate, I'm not so much interested in who you're going to model yourself after as to how your decisions on the Court of Appeals are going to be influenced by your experience as a prosecutor and how that experience is going to mold or change or support the current version of the Georgia Court of Appeals.
Well, I think, my experience as a prosecutor was a few years, a long time ago, and my experience ever since then has been in other areas of the law. It's a factor in my background. It's not the only factor. I think, my job as a judge will be to follow the law and apply it fairly.
Flat out of time.
Thank you.
Ken Shigley, how can people connect with you if they want more information?
Okay, you can go to my website. It's kenshigley.org. I'll just go ahead and give you my personal email address, which is ken@shigleylaw.com.
I appreciate your time.
Thank you.
404-892-2703, Realest Man on Radio.
Call us at 404-892-2703 on News and Talk 1380, WAOK.